Hi, good evening. This is your host, Deborah Herman, mystic medium animal communicator extraordinaire. Today, we are going to talk about your animals and my animals and all wonderful animal creatures and pet companions. Tonight, I'm wearing my animal communicator pet telepath hat. I like to do this about once a month because, as you all know, especially those of you who follow the column I write for Animal Life, animals love to talk. And this is a live call-in show, 888-815-9756. If you want to call in and ask about what your animal friends are thinking, or if you want to share some stories and talk about animals in general, that's what this evening is about, and that's what it's for, because there's a lot we can learn from our animal friends. Sometimes it's very surprising. When I first discovered that I was able to hear what the animals were thinking, as I've said in other shows, I really thought that I was, you know, going crackers, and it's really interesting, but I should have realized, because I also am a clairaudient, clairvoyant, and a person type of psychic medium, and I was used to receiving messages and having visions and hearing things, but it was very surprising when I started to hear things from the animals. And so I had to learn to distinguish what was my own thought and what was the animal's thought. And it became more real when I was able to corroborate what I was getting in my mind and in my mind's eye with what the pet owners were telling me. And they were telling me things that, you know, for example, I sometimes do dog on the street interviews and I upload them on YouTube. I'm going to be developing more of a YouTube presence. So I would stop a random person on the street. And, hey, Lisa Williams started this long before me. I mean, she would stop people on the street with her camera crew and say, I'm a clairvoyant and psychic medium. Do you know what that is? So I figure, hey, you know, I'm not Lisa Williams, but if she can get away with it, people are at least used to people having these gifts. She and many other people who are more of the celebrity psychics, they've paved the way for many of us who may be a bit more obscure, but perhaps hope to reach a wider audience. They've paved the way for us to be able to do things like this. So I would stop people on the street and I would talk to them and I would ask them, do you mind if I talk to your pet? And they would look at me a little bit quizzically, and I would take a video of it, and the pets would tell me funny things like, I would hear in my head, you know, I want this special treat, and I should have it. So I would describe it to the owner, and sure enough, they had been giving a certain kind of yogurt treat to the dog, and the dog was getting kind of fat. And they decided not to give it to the dog anymore. And the dog took issue with this because, you know, they don't have that many things going on in their lives, typically. And as any of you who have dogs will attest, dogs like their food and they like their treats. And they're very specific about what it is that they like. So that was certainly kind of funny. And it's the dog may not get his or her way, but at least the owner knows that the dog is aware. Even though we're different species, there is communication that goes on between animals themselves. They have ways of communicating, and I know that they use telepathy between each other, and they use something beyond, if you live with an animal, it's not just their body language that you're responding to. No one can tell me that these dogs are not telling us something also with their thoughts and with their minds. I know that I have, for those of you who've been following the show, I have Phoebe, who's my mixed breed dog with the underbite, and she's truly hilarious and pure emotion. And then there's Gracie, who is my more refined whippet. Well, anyway, anytime if I give food, Gracie likes to put herself to bed. We have a two-story house, and she likes to put herself to bed around 9 o'clock. She goes upstairs, and we don't see her until we go upstairs. Or sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes Gracie will stay downstairs with us till we go up to bed, and Phoebe will go upstairs. But if I give Phoebe food and Gracie's upstairs, I know she's not smelling – I mean, I can't say 100% that she's not smelling it, but it would be – it's really a far distance. It's a big staircase. It's an old house. I am convinced that there's some kind of telepathic communication or vision that goes from Phoebe to Gracie, because Gracie will trot her little self down the stairs to see what kind of treat I am giving to Phoebe, especially if it's some kind of, chicken or people food. So they're communicating. All you have to do, if you want to learn to talk to your pets, you really need to be observant and quiet your thoughts. You will find that you can hear or see visions of what it is that they're thinking. You need to be aware of it and pay attention to it and believe that it's possible. It goes beyond just loving your pets. You can commune with them in ways that they find very natural, but we tend to dismiss because we're used to using our vocal cords to communicate. I don't think we realize that we communicate much, much more beyond what we say. Body language, thoughts, vibration. There's a whole dynamic that exists beyond our voices. And when people talk about animals being able to communicate with humans, they say that they can't because they can't talk the way we talk. They don't have the same vocal system, except for parrots. They can mimic, or actually, I had an African gray parrot named Toby. Toby was amazing, and Toby actually could think and had, they say that the African gray parrots have the intelligence of like a 3-year-old child or even, I think even above. This parrot was amazing and he was smart and he freaked me out because I didn't know, we had gotten him, he was already owned by another owner, he was grown, and we had gotten him when he already had a vocabulary, and I didn't know. I was upstairs in my house. This was years ago, and I have no idea what that ringing is. Sorry, little technical difficulty here. Had no idea. In fact, that would have been funny right now. That was exactly when I was about to talk about the phone ringing. This parrot, I was upstairs and the phone rang and I didn't know that this parrot understood what a phone was, and he knocked the phone off the receiver and said, "Hello," and had mimicked the sound of my husband's voice. And it was absolutely hilarious. And I was like, wait a second, I don't think he's home. And I ran downstairs only to see that the parrot was talking into the phone receiver. So parrots can mimic and can actually verbalize the way that we verbalize. But other animals communicate through their telepathy. So it's really an amazing thing to do. I feel very privileged and grateful that I have the gift of animal telepathy. So if you want to know what your pets are thinking, give me a call at 888-815-9756. Don't be shy. I know that we had a couple of week hiatus. I was visiting in California, have some adventures to share with you. I was able to go to SeaWorld, and that was amazing. I loved it. It's certainly something I recommend. Of course, if I would probably have preferred meeting all of these sea creatures in the wild, but it's not usually life is not conducive to meeting beluga whales in their own natural habitat. and some people are privileged to live in parts of the world where they can swim with dolphins and commune with them, but I'm very happy if I get to do that at SeaWorld. I'm truly like a little kid. And so it was just a wonderful trip for me. And they were very gracious because I am a member of the media and an animal communicator. So they did give us passes to go. But I didn't really get to go behind the scenes that much. But what was interesting is when I was flying into San Diego, there was a person from SeaWorld who was taking a black vulture back from a trip onto one of the evening. I think it might have been on the. I don't think it was the Tonight Show, but he was on. He was on Dr. Oz. I think that's where he appeared, because vultures are able to eat awful things like, like biological. I forget what it's called, but poisons and all kinds of diseased types of things. They can eat botulism and E. coli and all of these things, and they don't get sick. And so they study the vultures in order to develop ways of helping human beings who, of course, could die from those types of bacteria and diseases and all of that kind of thing. So we were riding in the plane, and in first class, there was this black vulture, and it was a very, very happy creature, and its handler said some very interesting things. Even though he wouldn't say that he was per se an animal communicator, I know he has to be using those skills, because he's very in tune with the various creatures in his charge. He is particularly in charge of this vulture, and it's part of a show where they introduce the animals to the public, and the birds they fly free and then go back to their handlers. But he says that he never has the bird do anything without asking it. And he's very in tune with whether or not the bird is interested or comfortable with a particular, I wouldn't call them tricks, but with a particular task that he's asking the vulture to do. And one of the things may be just simply to come out of its cage. It's not in any way threatening to human beings, but it can certainly, like any wild creature, can become dangerous if it's frightened. So he's taught the vulture and some of the other birds, if it's uncomfortable, to come to him, for example, or another handler, or to go back in its cage. And I thought about it, And there's a real correspondence with human behavior and how he's been training this wild bird. And that is, and I talked to him about it because he was very willing to talk to people about this unusual creature that he was carrying with him, as if it were, you know, just your everyday run-of-the-mill kind of pet. And he said, we talked about something that I've learned about and studied a little bit called dialectical behavior therapy, which is a very useful form of therapy for people who perhaps have had trauma, post-traumatic stress, borderline personality disorder. It's people who can't, and I'm sure all of us at some point or another fall into this category, but it teaches skills when you are faced with feelings that are intolerable. And I had the privilege of working at a school for a while with girls that had gone through trauma and the foster system, and very unfortunately for them, terrible forms of abuse, and literally there would be times when these girls would become overwhelmed. They might have some kind of triggering into an emotional flashback, and they might literally want to bolt out of the classroom. And they had been taught, they were being taught these DBT skills from a wonderful therapist, and they had taught the teachers, of course, to understand about it. And one of the techniques is that in the moment, you find a way to comfort yourself or create what they call a wise mind, so that instead of reacting or acting out in various ways, you know, some of the girls would listen to music, they might journal, they might write, they might, you know, just sit in the sunshine, do something that is a positive thing, but allows them to settle in and tolerate the feelings. And the more that they do this, the more that they're able to cope. So he was, unbeknownst to him, but only because he was very sensitive to the needs of this creature, he was teaching it these kinds of skills. So that if the bird was being surrounded by all of these people looking at it or poking at it or being loud, instead of lashing out as a defense mechanism, and I mean, this was a wild vulture who had been, to some extent, domesticated. They're not known for being nice to people or even being able to stay close to human beings. And he had taught this bird to be able to commune with humans, and yet, if it felt threatened, would you know, would be able to either go into its cage or would you know, go back to him and nestle into his arms so it would find comfort there. We have a caller, Jesse from Pleasant Valley. How are you?
Hello, Deborah. I know that we're both involved in autism, so I'm wondering if you could explain the connection between people who have autism and their bond with animals, such as with horses, for instance.
With what?
People with autism and horses and cats, you know, they seem to have a bond with animals that...
Yes, you are. That is an absolute wonderful question. I'm so happy that you brought it up. I know that I fully believe that people, of course, as you know, Jesse, and Jesse, I know Jesse, he is an author of a book, Atypical, which I recommend highly. It is about living with Asperger's syndrome, which is a form of high-functioning autism. As you know, autism is a spectrum, and people fall on many, many levels and different forms of functionality. One of the things that is typical with some people on the spectrum is that they some children can be literally nonverbal. And one of the things that they have found is that they can communicate in many ways. And I have found this by being around some children that are relatively nonverbal, that they communicate in some ways telepathically. That there is a lot going on, but they're unable to somehow translate it through their neurons into verbal speech. And because my theory is that because animals, particularly horses are so spiritual and so sensitive to energy, because of that and because of the way horses communicate, my theory is that there is true telepathic and vibrational communication going on between children who have autism and the horse. And, you know, unless a horse, I've seen horses that would otherwise be more aggressive or spook with children who are developmentally disabled or autistic, and they're as gentle as can possibly be. And it's almost as if they understand and know that this is a young person. It's not a horse, doesn't smell like a horse, doesn't look like a horse, but there's something about this other species that requires this gentle nature. And I think that's what's going on. What do you think, Jesse?
I think that people with autism, they're able to bond with animals in the sense that, you know, a horse, a dog, or a cat is not going to judge them on their social graces or lack of. So that has a lot to do with it, but you could be right. You're very involved in the spiritual genre, so I'm sure that there's a lot going on telepathically. I wish I could telepathically communicate with my cat, not to always lie in my important documents. I wish I could telepathically. He lies on papers. On important documents.
Well, that's because he wants your attention. I mean, that's a simple thing. But you know what they say, if you want to actually communicate with your cat, try picturing in your mind, okay? I'm not going to have you try the literal telepathic thing that, you know, I've developed over years and years, and I'm sure you can do it. But if you want to try something out, picture in your mind what you want your cat to do, not what you don't want it to do, because it sends mixed messages. So picture your cat. I mean, of course, you could just pick the cat up and say and put it down off the papers, and then, of course, you're going to have a power struggle, which will be comical, and I'm sure the cat will win. But picture,
it always
you know.
Does.
Yeah, cats are like that. But picture your cat, you know, you could even go as far as to picture, if you get off my papers and literally picture the cat off your papers, I will give you a can of tuna. And give the cat a can of tuna. Now, the cat, like when we were at Jungle Island, there was a gorilla who had all of his trainers trained, because he knew that if he created this, if he held his hose so that the water was backing up, or if he made it so that the hose was running all the time, that the to get him to stop, that the trainer would give him a treat. So, of course, that's what he did, because he wanted the treat. So it might be that your cat is actually trying to train you. So you might,
well, cats
do you understand?
Are funny. Yeah, when you cannot pay attention to it, that's when it does things like scratch and bite. But when you do pay attention to it, that's when it wants to be left alone.
Exactly. Cats are hilarious. So try focusing a picture in your mind, and then next time you can call, of course, any show, but next time I do the animal show, which is about once a month, let me know if it works. Try a picture, you know, the cat sitting on your papers. Try a picture in your mind. Imagine in your mind the cat walking off the papers and you giving it a can of tuna. And then, or a treat. And then you go and you give it the can of tuna.
Okay, I'll try that.
See, because it really is funny, but there are ways to train, you know, to get them to do what you want them to do. Cats are not as easy, but my daughter, who I think is my oldest daughter, who I really believe is part feline sometimes, she's trained our cat. And she doesn't live with us anymore, but when she's home, she's trained our big orange monster who thinks he's a lion cat. She's trained him to sit, you know, and beg and stand and do all these different things. I never thought you could train a cat. You know, we just sort of negotiate, she trains the cat. So anyway, thank you for asking a very, very important question tonight, and I'd like to address it again in the future.
Okay, well, thank you for talking with me, Deborah. Enjoy the rest of your show.
Thank you, Jesse.
Have a good night. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That is so wonderful. I love getting callers. Don't be shy. The number to call in is 888-815-9756. We have about another 20 minutes or so. I can certainly talk to more of you and tell you, either answer a question like what Jesse had asked, or tell you what your animal friends are thinking. I'll tell you a little bit more about my trip to SeaWorld. It was truly amazing, but sometimes when I go to a place like that, I don't know what to expect, because not all animals want to commune, and these animals, sea creatures and the like, are bombarded with energy all day long. This happened to not be a very busy day. It's off season. It was rainy out. Kind of cold, actually. I was a bit surprised. It wasn't quite as overwhelming, but still, they're not always, I don't always expect that I'm going to get something from them. So, any animal communicator, we don't walk around all the time like Dr. Doolittle, where everywhere he would go, you know, at least from the movies with Eddie Murphy, you know, the animals would come out and they'd have this whole thing going on and they'd be talking to him and he'd be covering his head with a pillow and say, please leave me alone. You know, it's not quite like that. You know, there's a bit of a mutual respect. They know I can hear them. I know they can hear me, and I sort of tune in. Otherwise, I would just be even, you know, more. Let's just say it would be more distressing than being an open psychic is. You have to have a little bit of control. So when I went into SeaWorld. And I was waiting around. The first thing I did is my husband was off doing something, and I was waiting for him. And the first creature I saw, and it was like, yay, a creature, was a pigeon. So I looked at the pigeon. Pigeon looked at me. I looked at the pigeon, and I heard as clear as a bell in my head, I heard, don't bother me, I'm working. This pigeon was gathering up little pieces of leftover food, and it was truly hilarious, and he was busy as could be. And then another pigeon came over, and they were communing with each other, and they picked up little pieces of popcorn and all kinds of other, you know, food that you would find at SeaWorld from all the concessionaires, and it was really funny. So I said, okay, well, I don't usually have luck with pigeons, and seagulls truly are not nice. And I'm sure I've told this before, but one of my first experiences with animal communication was trying to tune into a seagull when I was in Cape Cod, and it said to me, I don't like you. I don't like people. Leave me alone. And it was just like, well, I didn't mean anything by it. I'm just trying to talk to you. You know, what's it like being a seagull? And then, of course, he swooped in and pecked at our food. And I think my son was with me at the time, and the kids had a box of donuts, and it grabbed the donuts. I mean, they're aggressive, and they're really focused on getting food. So, you know, I've kind of given up on the seagulls. So afterwards, we went to see sea otters, and they were adorable, and they had a baby sea otter in the nursery. And again, because I am privileged to be media, they let me go in the back in the nursery, and the little baby sea otter came, you know, scooting out of its little pool and, you know, started reaching for me and was nibbling at my fingers, and I got to take a really cute picture. But when you try to tune into a baby sea otter, pretty much, just like with a human, you're kind of getting stuff like, gaga goo goo, here I am in the world, I don't much understand, you know, what's going on, but you seem nice, and you know, it certainly liked my energy, because it was certainly not afraid of me, and they were feeding it little shrimps, and it was the cutest thing ever. So that was really fun. You know, I just sort of wandered around, and I didn't really get any profound messages when I was petting the dolphins, because there's an area there where the dolphins come right up to you, but everybody's petting the dolphins, and they're probably just like, I don't want to talk to anybody. So, you know, I just wasn't really getting anything, and I was thinking, well, maybe I'm just a little bit off. Took a sip of water. That's the advantage of you not being able to see what I'm doing. But we went over, and it was time for lunch, and we were sitting at a table, and there was, of course, a seagull, and it kept its distance. But there was another bird, and I took photos of this bird, and I'm going to post it on Facebook. I'd love for someone to identify what it actually is. And it had a very pointy beak. It was not a seagull, but it was kind of a scavenger bird. And so this guy was really – it was missing part of one of its toes. It had gotten caught in a net or something. And it kept hopping up and getting close to this. We were in a special area that had – a little fence, and it was like a hut, and there were picnic tables in it, and people brought their food there. So the kids were throwing little French fries in its direction, and it was ignoring it, and then I tried to throw a little bit of bread, even though they say, don't feed the birds, don't feed the birds. You know, I was bored and wanted to commune with some species other than my own, and other than my husband. And so I put a little piece of bread up on the fence. And my husband, I'm convinced, is also an animal communicator, because he said, you know, I think he wants your chicken. And sure enough, I heard in my head, I said, you know, don't you want – I'm giving you a French fry. I'm giving you a piece of bread. He said, and I heard this bird say, I want chicken. And I'm thinking to myself, what a cannibal bird. But it was a scavenger. So the bird got really close, and it was a big bird. And I, even I think bigger than a seagull, and I kept putting little pieces of chicken, like a little bit away from, just far enough away from where I was eating. And for about 20 minutes, this bird just ate lunch with us and was eating the chicken. So finally, people started to gather around, and they started to notice that this bird was not in any way nervous around us and was sharing lunch with us. And I realized that, you know, this bird must have, I don't know if it knew I was an animal communicator or what, or if it was just a hungry bird, but they said that it was very surprising that he was sitting as close to us as he was. And I thought it was just really funny. And then we just finally got bored, and the bird got bored and probably full because it ate most of my lunch. And so we got up and went around and decided to see what other adventures we could have at SeaWorld. Now, I will continue telling these stories, but I want to remind the audience tonight, I know that you really like talking about your pets. So this is live tonight. I know you also are used to, we had a couple of weeks where we had the archives because I was out gathering more funny stories to tell you. So the number here is 888-815-9756. Do feel free to give us a call, and let's find out what your animals are thinking about and what is on their mind. And whether or not if you're having, sometimes we can mediate things between an animal and its human companion, because they have feelings too about things that happen in your home. And you may think that they're just acting out and they're bad and they're behaving a certain way because they just hate you or they're just bad, but truly, there may be a reason why a cat or a dog is, relieving itself in places where it shouldn't. There may be certain reasons why they're acting anxious, why they don't like certain people. They have a full spectrum of feelings and thoughts. They may in some ways not be as sophisticated as we think we are. But they do, and some creatures, like my horse Tatanka, also are very spiritual and have a lot to say about what it means to be human and from their perspective, and what is happening in the world. In fact, I had a very interesting experience. Most of what I was getting, was fun and funny and lighthearted. We went to see the exhibit at the very end of our day. We were getting tired because we really did. We saw Shamu, which was really amazing. Unfortunately, because of the horrible accident that happened in Tampa, they don't really let the trainers get in the water anymore with the large killer whales. And they were telling us that it's actually sad for the killer whales because they also rely on the physical attention and affection that they were getting from their trainers. That was an isolated incident. I don't know, for those of you who don't know what happened, but there was a trainer and she had been working with a killer whale in the SeaWorld in, I guess it would be Busch Gardens or Tampa, for many, many years, and he grabbed her ponytail and started going around, and she couldn't catch her breath, and she drowned. Very tragic circumstance. I think it was about a year ago or so. So, but the show was still lovely, and when you see the killer whales swimming and they really, I'm sure it would be even more amazing to see them in their own habitat. And I don't have an opinion about whether or not the whales should be in a place like SeaWorld. I am grateful a place like SeaWorld exists because I, in my lifetime, would never be able to get close to appreciate the absolute beauty and amazing appearance and energy of these creatures. They're just brilliant. I've been able to go on whale watches where I've seen other types of whales, but not these. They're just so rare. So, you know, again, I can see both sides to the opinion. I'm grateful that I was able to see them. So at the end of our day, we were we'd also seen an amazing show with different kinds of whales and dolphins, and I just so recommend if you're in the San Diego area that you go and see the shows that they have, because they're amazing, they're brilliant. They had people diving off the high dive and dressed as colorful parrots, and it's truly a spectacle. But at the end of the day, we went into the Antarctic exhibit. They had polar bears. They had an absolutely huge walrus, which swam so close to the glass that you really felt that you were right there with it. They have a very, very big habitat. And then the most amazing thing for me was seeing the beluga whales. Beluga whales are white, and they are truly angelic in appearance. I someday hope to swim with beluga whales, but this was truly an amazing experience because of the way they have it set up. I was getting kind of tired, and I said, well, so I got a few funny stories, you know, between the bird and the pigeon and the little baby otter. You know, I thought nothing really profound, but at least I went there and I had some fun experiences. When I was looking at the glass with the belugas, I heard the beluga say to me, "Don't go yet." And I've heard that same expression. My horse says that to me sometimes when he wants me to stay and commune and he has a message for me. And I just figured, okay, well, I won't go. The next thing that was amazing, it was absolutely amazing, is there was a baby whale, a calf, that belonged to this particular beluga mother. And they did like a water ballet together and showed this, the way that they are, the love that they have, the, you know, not to anthropomorphize, but as a mother of a child, you know, I could just feel this connection between these two mammals, the love, the protection. And then the whale would swim away, and then it would swim back and get underneath where his mother was, under her protective shadow. It was nursing. It was absolutely breathtaking. And I thought, well, that's enough. That's just what the whale wanted me to see, that these creatures are very much like us, that they're very capable of loving one another, and they may be a different species, but they're not that different. They're mammals like we are. But I got a message from the beluga. And I must have been thinking about 2012 and some research I'm doing with an author who's writing a lot of things about, you know, the environment and the future, and is it going to be a positive future? Is it going to be a negative future? And a lot of things were on my mind because we're in a time now where people are focused on the Mayan calendar. Someone thought that the rapture was going to happen on May 21st. People were thinking about that. We're living in very uncertain times, and if you go on the internet, someone told me, don't do it. Don't go overboard in reading everybody's opinions, because it's like falling down the rabbit hole. You really will feel upside down, and you don't want to lose your connection. But what the beluga said to me that I'm going to share with you now is, don't let your world end It belongs to us too. I'll tell you that again. Don't let your world end. It belongs to us too. Somewhat ominous, but yet very loving. Wake up. We need, as spiritual beings, we need to wake up. We have more control in many ways over what happens to the earth. We have many decisions to make about what kind of future we want to have. And we need to be aware that these species that we see as other than us, they're not us. They're behind glass. They're in a different part of the world, Antarctica. They don't have two legs, two arms, and you know, noses the way we do. So somehow, so many of us, we think that they're inferior. But we share the earth. We are responsible. So whatever we do, if we are not good custodians of our world, it's affecting all of these other beings. And that's what they are. They're beings. You know, they're not here just for our pleasure or our purposes. And I thought about it, and I wrote it down because I didn't want to get it wrong. And I was very grateful. That was truly a message that I wanted to bring back to you all, the listening audience to Soul Odyssey. So, on a lighter note, my dogs were very happy when I returned from my journey. When I was in California, I also got to visit with my grand cat and grand dog. My daughter has a miniature dachshund, long-haired dachshund named Hippie. Shout out to Hippie. And it is probably one of the cutest dogs ever. No offense to Gracie and Phoebe, my dogs, or any of the other dogs in the world. But this dog truly, has its own Twitter and Facebook, like Tonk does, Tonk the Mystic Wonder Horse. And it's just adorable. And it dances, and it cuddles, and it nuzzles, and jumps on my lap. And I really was planning on putting it in my suitcase till my daughter discovered that I was doing that. And she said, "You're not going to take my dog." So I tried to put the cat in the suitcase because the cat lived with us since my daughter was in fourth grade, and she's now 20. So it was really nice visiting with them. And what was interesting is the cat, her name is Mitzi, when she was living with us, she was one of several cats. And now she gets to be the only cat. And she is liking this. Because when she was our cat, she was always in defensive mode. Because the other cats were actually bigger than her. But because Hippie is a runt and is just such a little thing, she's actually bigger than Hippie. Which is, I never thought I would see something littler than her. Because she was kind of a runt. And every so often, she will just, you know, she won't put her claws out. Well, I don't know if she does or not, but Hippie will be, you know, just being Hippie and jumping around and being funny. And Hippie's about a little over a year, so is still kind of a puppy. And Mitzi will just bop that dog on its head and on its rear end and just bop it and basically put it in its place. And it's the funniest thing because this cat now is feeling like I am cat. And for any of you who are who live with a cat, you know that they have very big egos. So next time we do our Talk to the Animals broadcast, for those of you who are sharing your home with cats who are relatively uncooperative, give me a call and I will let you know what they are thinking. Because the last thing they want is for you to know what they are thinking. Because cats are very smart, and they just are a whole different ball game than dealing with dogs. Dogs are also smart, but they tend to have a much more engaging and communing type of personality. And, you know, what you see is what you get. Cats are not always like that, even in their body language. You know, I read an article in PetMD yesterday about cats and their body language, and sometimes the things that they do are so counterintuitive. If you are thinking that what they're doing is just like a dog, you're going to wind up getting sliced. Because, for example, if they're showing you their tummy and they're laying on their back, try to be aware of what else they're doing. Because what they might be doing is creating the ability to have a defensive posture. So you might think, oh, this is so cute, they want me to rub their belly. And believe me, I have been sucked in. We have two male cats. One is Garfield, one is Caruso. And, you know, Garfield is more of a slice 'em and dice 'em type. Caruso actually does let me rub his belly. He's just a sweet old guy, and he just loves attention. But I now was able, even though, you know, I pride myself on being an animal communicator, sometimes you just got to pay attention to the reality that's in front of you and what they're actually doing. Because if a cat is showing you its belly and you go to rub its little belly, because, oh, and they're so soft looking and it is so tempting, just be aware that they might be feeling threatened, and before you can move your hand, you might get scratched. You know, these cats are hunters, and they, even if they're living as fat cats, and when my son, I hope he's listening, but when my son was young, he told the story of the fat cat ways and how the fat cats taught the younger cats how to be fat cats, because that's what seemed to happen to the older cats. But even if they're fat cats, they still think of themselves as hunters. So pay attention. We have Maria from Texas. You got yourself in right at the end of the show. It's so nice to hear from you.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope you're doing fine.
I'm very well.
I was just calling to see if I could, I was wondering if I could just get a reading.
On you or your animal?
Actually on me, if it's possible.
It is certainly possible. I am always available. Would you like a Soul Odyssey deck reading?
Sure.
Okay. I am always available. Just takes me a second to pull it up. For those of you who might be new listeners, I have a deck that I've created called Soul Odyssey Oracle Deck. And I choose cards digitally, and I do a reading based on the cards that I choose. We don't have that much time, so I'm just going to go right to it. And then perhaps next week, same time, same station, we can talk a little bit more about the Soul Odyssey deck and what it means.
Okay.
First card I'm getting for you is card number 13. It comes up a lot, which leads me to believe that it's an important message for the times that we're living in. And it's it says let go. And that can mean many things. It can mean, you know, let go of worry. I'm having a feeling that for you it means let go of worry and transform the energy that you're putting into worrying, maybe about finances, and transform that into positive action and faith, because you're using up a lot of energy in worry. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Your spirit guides and mine are sending you a message that, hey, it's all going to be okay. And if you pull yourself off that, you know, that gerbil wheel of worry, you'll be able to consciously hear the messages that your spirit guides are trying to give you, and you'll be able to find certain solutions that may not seem apparent to you right now. Next card, I'm going to see if I have time, is 22. And this comes up a lot, too, on the readings I've been doing on the air, and it's the Hope card. So, again, this is a very strong message to you, and it must also relate to the listening audience. But, you know, again, we're going through troubled times. If we just look at the news and what happened in Joplin, you know, Missouri, it's freaky, and it makes us all feel it's awful. So hold on to your hope, okay? And know that, and for some reason, you know, I don't always talk about God, but I feel it's very important to tell you that God is with you. Do you understand?
Okay, yes, I do. Thank you.
All right. So yes. Hold on to your hope. Unfortunately, I'm getting close to the end of the hour. You can email me at Deborah@soul-odyssey.com. And if you have any further questions or want to respond to the reading. And also, you can tune in next week and I'll do more readings with the deck.
Okay.
But I have to wrap up the show.
Yes.
But again, let go and have hope because God is with you.
Okay. Thank you, Deborah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. You're very, very welcome. That brings us to the end of another Soul Odyssey show. And I want to thank my callers, Jesse and Maria. I hope that you all will tell your friends about the show. I am back in town. I don't think I'll be missing any shows in the near future, and I'll let you know if I am. Or I'll try to broadcast from wherever I am on the globe. Just got a little hectic. And remember to call in. It's a live call-in show, and I can do readings from the deck. I can tell you about your pets. We can just schmooze. We can talk about subjects of the esoteric, paranormal. You can ask me anything you want. Sometimes I even can do mediumship if you ask. We can commune with your loved ones who have passed over. This was an awesome show. I'm happy to be back. God bless you all, and I will look forward to hearing from you again next week. Have a wonderful week.